As technology and society have developed, so too has the legislation developed to support, control, and protect the rights of individuals, organizations, and the information concerned. This is Stuff Employers Should Know.
Welcome to Stuff Employers Should Know, proudly brought to you by LabourNet, management's ultimate HR solution.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. It's Yasser Yaslakit Ismail, audio producer and host for today. Mr. BGD has made a big move, and he isn't in studio, but of course we'll still be having him on the show. A little bit more on that in another episode. But today we are joined by Samantha Walker and Chanel Spreeman, who will be taking us through the link between human rights and data privacy. So without further ado, ladies, let's get the show on the road.
So excited to be back in studio with Chanel Spreeman. We've got another podcast topic for you on human rights and data privacy. We haven't been in the studio for a while, but we are no stranger to this studio. Chanel, I believe you've just written a beautiful article on human rights and data privacy. Do you want to maybe jump straight into what we can expect from the session?
Yeah, no, really glad to be back. We just thought it quite fitting to discuss data protection rights, seeing as we've just celebrated Human Rights Month. And, you know, human rights or data protection rights are human rights. That's pretty much going to be the outline of our discussion today. We're just going to also look at it from a historical perspective, because obviously we understand that we do have a history in terms of human rights, and that extends to data protection rights as well. So we'll be just looking at how we got here and having a look at what data protection rights are afforded to data subjects in South Africa.
And I think one of the key aspects really that you've just mentioned is that data protection rights are human rights. And I know when we say something like that, a lot of people are going to peek their eyebrows up and open their eyes and go, what? And I think it's very important for our listeners to know that the legislation we necessarily interact with is generally founded in a human right. And maybe you could take us through where the right to privacy necessarily comes from.
Yeah, no, definitely. Human rights or data protection rights are definitely human rights. So if we look at the data protection legislation in South Africa, you know, POPI is currently the most popular piece of legislation that we refer to, but this has been long coming. So obviously, as we know, the UN had that Declaration of Human Rights, and that's pretty much informed all of our human rights law since around about the 1930s. And when I was doing my research, it was actually quite interesting for me to see that since the 1990s, actually, there's been recommendations on information protection, which is quite wild, because if you think about the 1990s, we were not too concerned with the information that we were collecting and sharing, but there was definitely some recommendations coming through with regards to how we should be protecting information. At the same time, South Africa had also ratified some treaties.
And I think it's quite interesting. If we look at the 90s, the World Wide Web was born in 1991. So literally at the dawn of your internet almost, we all of a sudden start seeing these heavy recommendations come in for data protection, which is quite nice to see the impact that technology has had on this area of law as well.
Definitely. I think if we look at the development of data protection legislation, we can align it with how the internet and just our technology has developed. And when you're saying that, I was just thinking that, you know, the recommendations were there and we didn't know what it looked like at the time. And I think that the people who probably really knew what it looked like were the people working in the background, the ones that were developing the tech. So they had an idea in terms of, you know, all the information that they would need to have the internet and all of this tech up and running. From there, in the early 2000s, we saw that the government then started introducing legislation such as RICA, such as ECTA. So that was the first time that we now started to see the legislature actually paying attention to looking at how individuals' information is being collected and just trying to regulate that.
And I think, yeah, it was very interesting to see that the government tried to take steps to start protecting personal information in the form of RICA. And then we saw that act was declared unconstitutional.
Yeah, it was funny enough. And not too long ago, mainly because it lacked a lot of provisions or it lacked a lot of framework for in the instances where there are kind of exceptions coming through. So yes, we can intercept communication, but what happens when, for example, there's legal privilege involved or journalistic privilege? But important to note is that yes, it's been declared unconstitutional, but this judgment has been suspended. So they have actually given the legislature an opportunity to go and fix those shortfalls.
And I think that's really showing where we're moving towards. The courts are going, let's not fully declare this, you know, unconstitutional and throw the piece of legislation away. Go back, fix it, give them time. And what that shows is we are going to constantly move towards a space where we uphold data protection rights, or at least try to. I think the one hand of it is the government necessarily giving us this legislation and the guidance and the framework. And the other side of that coin is us as citizens of this country actually taking that into account and respecting data protection rights and, in essence, human rights as well.
True.
Now, we've also just seen another move come into play most recently with the Cyber Crimes Act.
Yeah, so generally, you know, when you were talking now, I was just thinking about how, yes, the legislature has given us an opportunity to go back and rectify everything. And I think it's just also just given us that grace to understand that we are still learning. So from RICA to ECTA and now to the Cyber Crimes Bill, what we always see is just more of a development. So we see that the legislature is definitely developing their law more. They're looking at, they look back at what was previously not done in a specific act, and then they add onto that and they grow into that. And we also find that, you know, with data protection, there are actually a few pieces of legislation which work together. So with the Cyber Crimes Bill that you've just mentioned, sorry, it's now an act actually, that now allows us to actually enforce what data protection rights we may have within other pieces of legislation, like your POPI and your PIA and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think it's quite beautiful that we have this framework that we rely on. You know, there's all different bits at play, but I think at the core of it, it's so important to note that all of this comes from our Constitution. POPI is a direct result of Section 14, right to privacy, in our Bill of Rights and Constitution. Now, what's so fascinating for me, that Constitution, that's our 1996 Constitution. The right to privacy was already there in 1996. Mm. It took us all the way to 2013 to actually get a framework in place. Mm. And then that also wasn't all signed into effect, only really the information regulator provisions. And only in 2021 have we seen really our right to privacy being enforced by the legislature in terms of POPI. So it's taken us a long time. And as you mentioned, we're constantly seeing that development. The legislature is almost looking at what they've done and going, where did we fail? Let's not take it as a failure. Let's take it as a lesson and get better in the next piece. And I think we're just going to keep on seeing that development. And I think it's one of the most important things why we should be on the data protection journey now, because we're going to get left behind if we're not.
Definitely. And I think it's just one of the markers of our Constitution as well, because we are actually obligated to look at other legislation from other countries as well. I think that's definitely helping to influence. So I fully agree that, you know, we are definitely keeping ahead or, you know, up to trend in terms of what's required of us globally, but also just learning as we go along. And I think it's almost as if the legislature, they're not necessarily taking their time, but they are able to look back, recognize the mistakes and improve, which is really good to see.
And that's just talking about POPI. So we've got this constitutional right, Section 14. POPI came into effect. I think the way POPI was drafted, you can see the lessons they took out of RICA. There wasn't such stringent rules. It was this principle-based legislation that was open to interpretation in many areas. So POPI's not a one-size-fits-all, which they tried in RICA. That failed. We can now see their sort of, I don't want to say their second attempt, but their new way of dealing with it, which is very in line with Europe and the UK. And I do think we're going to see this onward trend in this principle-based legislation.
Fully agree. I think it also allows us to have that flexibility to interpret the legislation in a way that makes sense. And I think even from a commercial perspective, I mean, we can't have rigid rules when we're dealing with different types of industries and public bodies versus private bodies. So that sort of framework and constant development is definitely necessary.
Yeah, and I think you know, it would be ridiculous to think that a company with 3,000 employees must get compliant in the same way as someone with 2 employees. Yes, the legislation applies to both of them. They both have the obligations, but the way we implement those obligations will be different due to resources, size of business. All of these things does necessarily affect it. And I think it's important to note all that we are doing in order to achieve compliance is ultimately honoring our human rights. And then that brings me to Poppy's older sister, Paya, that has been around with us for a little bit longer than Poppy necessarily. But why was Paya brought into this ring?
Yeah. So as I understand it, the main history behind Paya is that pre-94, you know, there was a lot of secrecy with regards to organizations. They would withhold a lot of information. I mean, we've seen it with cases being reopened in the the TRC and that. So the legislature wanted to get rid of just that idea of, you know, the secrecy and what organizations are withholding from individuals. So PIA, the Promotion of Access to Information Act, the main objective behind that act is just to promote transparency between public and private bodies and allow individuals to be able to approach the state and say, hey, look, I need specific information from you, or you need to be transparent with regards to what records you have, usually in an instance where they need to exercise a right. But I think just for general openness.
100%. And I think also important to note is PIA wasn't just thought out of thin air. PIA is there to give effect to our constitutional rights as well, and in particular, Section 32 of our Constitution, which again was brought into place in 1996. So they have taken some time to put the framework into place. But PIA plays a very, very important role in our country, particularly, I think, viewing it in the historical context you've described of the secrecy. And no one was really able to enforce their rights. PIA is giving that power back to the people to hold institutions or governments accountable. I can't tell you how many court cases I was involved in as an attorney where someone had a good case. I couldn't get the evidence to necessarily take that case to court, and we would start having to do PIA requests. And because of PIA, PIA gave me that opportunity to get that evidence to help that individual. And I think it's very important. We must know we need to protect personal information, but we also need to allow access to it when it is that data subject's information.
True. And I love how, or I don't even know if it was an intention from their side, but they've now got Poppy in, you know, from 2021, and PIA has been around since 2000. So I like how they've used the legislation that was already there as a way to now give effect to rights that we have in terms of Poppy. Because previously it would be, you know, your state institutions that would be withholding information. But as technology and everything has developed, a lot of our private institutions are custodians of large pieces of our information. I mean, they pretty much control a lot of our market. We live in a capitalist society. So at least we have PIA that's there for them to also be regulated in terms of how they, you know, have our information and how we can access it from there.
Yeah, I think it's very important to achieve that balance between the protecting and the promoting that PIA necessarily gives us. And again, it comes down to providing rights to data subjects that they didn't have before. And I think the move that we saw, that PIA was sort of governed by the South African Human Rights Commission, and we saw that being moved to the information regulator. So the information regulator is now the custodian of Poppy and PIA. So when I use the terms, it's older sister, it really is. They work hand in hand together. And from some of the investigation notices I've seen, they do not only ask about Poppy. They ask about PIA at the same time. Now, it's all very good and well to say comply with these acts and you'll give the data subjects the rights. I think we've had quite a few podcasts on how to comply with certain areas, but maybe if you want to take us through a brief overview, how would you be honoring human rights? What necessarily would you have to do in terms of Poppy?
Well, in terms of Poppy, one of the rights, if I could just go just straight into what there are data subjects have in terms of Poppy. One of them is the right to notification. So if we look at this right that the data subjects have to notification, and we look at the conditions that a organization needs to comply with, the first 6 conditions, if you're meeting those first six conditions, you're already promoting a data subject's right to notification. I mean, if you're holding yourself accountable and limiting the information that you process and, you know, giving them the correct purpose or, you know, identifying identifying correct purposes, you're notifying the data subject of exactly what you're doing with regards to the information that you have about them, and you're obviously then promoting their rights. If we look at security safeguards, I mean, that takes up the bulk of implementation when we look at Poppy. If you have your security safeguards in place, all you're doing is just promoting the rights to privacy. So now you're directly promoting a data subject's right to privacy. Their information is protected, and we know that then you're also complying with your obligations in terms of Poppy. And then that data subject participation kind of links back to what we just spoke about with regards to PAIA. So if you are allowing your data subjects to participate, you are promoting this, you know, transparency and the openness. If you're allowing them to object, if you're allowing them to request, make submissions to the information regulator, that sort of thing, the data subjects are involved. There's openness, there's transparency all around. So I think it's important that organizations really understand, yes, the conditions are there for you to comply with and have your legal compliance in order, but you're also promoting the rights of the data subject in that same, you know.
100%. And I think it's important for a lot of organizations to realize why we are doing this. Yes, the legislation says we have to for compliance, but what is the bigger picture that, you know, the legislature necessarily is trying to achieve? And I'm going to use an example. I was in the bank a few weeks ago and I was standing behind an individual whose identity had been stolen. So his information was leaked through a data breach and someone had fraudulently stolen his identity, and they had managed to get into his banking account and take the money that he had in there. The account that they got into was his savings account for his child to go to college. Not a well-off man, you know, layman. He didn't drive a big fancy BM. This was your average man in the street. And now his daughter was not going to go to university or her first year of college because this money had been taken, and F&B was sort of fighting with him about whether they was going to get it back, whether pure fraud claim or you know, there's a whole bunch of requirements around that they have to look at. But that's in essence who we're trying to protect, is that man that I met in the bank that had saved for years to put his kid through college, and now his money's gone because someone stole his identity. And I think if we start thinking of Poppy and data protection from that perspective, who are we actually trying to protect? We may feel very differently about what we're doing in terms of data protection.
I fully agree, because I think, you know, we kind of maybe still think of data protection and information security as something that's abstract, but we are living in a digital age. Like, as you mentioned, that is a tangible example of how somebody is now lost, you know, a big opportunity because of data protection. We have online personas. We have online personalities. I mean, in the same way that we look at our traditional crimes, you know, protecting your property, getting your alarm system in place, we need to understand that we have digital presence, basically. We need to protect that. And we have the framework. It's there. You know, it's been developed over years and it's going to continue to develop. So we just need to utilize it.
I couldn't agree more. And I think if we send out any message today from this podcast, it's really to change the way you think about data protection. Know who you're protecting down the line. This is not just some data protection journey that we're going to tick a couple of boxes and be done. This is where we are actually vested in protecting our people and protecting our people against, you know, unscrupulous crimes, fraud, identity theft. These are serious things, and which we've seen at a heightened state at the moment in our country. And I think, you know, recessions and all of that, the worse the economy gets, the more the crimes tend to happen. So if we can come together and actually protect data, we will change the lives significantly of a lot of people in this country. And I really hope this podcast has helped you change the way you think about data protection and necessarily what we need to do and our responsibilities and why we are fulfilling these obligations. Chanel, maybe do you want to wrap up for us? Anything else you want to say?
I'll just keep it very simple and say that data protection rights are human rights, and we definitely need to protect them. So.
Exactly. Love the Bill of Rights, love Poppy. I think that's simplified. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I hope this podcast was informative.
So as always, if you want to get in touch with us, pop us an email on sesk@labornet.com. Let us know what you thought about today's episode as well as previous episodes, or if you have any suggestions as to what you would like to hear on the show, feel free to let us know. From me, Yasser Yaslak at Ismail, Thank you, as always, for tuning in to Stuff Employers Should Know. Until the next one. Cheers.
Stuff Employers Should Know was proudly brought to you by LabourNet, management's ultimate HR solution. For more episodes from Stuff Employers Should Know, go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you play your favorite shows. Case law or statutes referenced in the podcast are current at the time of recording.